Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast, and you're tuned into the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show. I'm your host, Michael Gay, broadcasting live from the ATL, that is Atlanta, Georgia. And the day is Saturday, November 27, 2021. Oh, wow. 2 days ago, it was Thanksgiving. And we're going to get into that conversation later on the show. We got 2 hours to burn, and we got a lot to talk about, so we're going to jump on it right away. But 2 days ago was Thanksgiving. We want to know, what did you do for Thanksgiving? And what does Thanksgiving mean to you? You know, every year it means something different for some folks, and every year it means the same. So I want to see if we're going to share that little bit of information. Plus, we have some topics and some stories. We're going to get into the Ahmaud Arbery verdict. Interesting, because there are some folks who thought it was going to be totally opposite of what it was. A lot of concerns of the racial overtones that occurred during the case, prior to the case, and now even after the case. But we're going to get into that. Also, my co-host Janet Davis, who also, and I really appreciate her, because she does a lot of the research and comes up with a lot of the topics for us. We're going to talk about what President Biden has done recently as far as releasing some of our oil reserve to offset the high gas prices. Is it something that is going to be helpful now, or is it a little bit too late? Because it seems like it's a regular thing that when we come to holiday seasons, and especially with the summer right around the corner, gas prices shoot up. We'll get into that. And exonerations. Recently this week, there was a story about a gentleman, Mr. Strickland, I believe, or Kirkland. I have to look on my notes. Who was exonerated after 43 years. But there's another story that came out this week about some individuals who were exonerated, and we'll get into that. So much to talk about, so much to discuss, and want to hear your thoughts, your point of view on these topics. Again, welcome to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show, and I got to open up the mic to my co-host here. Looks like she's waving her hand. Now, it's so funny. I'm looking here on the board and on the other board. It would just, you know, give me a little check mark. But here it has a hand waving. So I'm going to open up the mic to my co-host, Miss Janet Davis. Happy Saturday, Janet. How you doing?
Happy Saturday to you too, Michael. It's, I'm doing fine. It's just been cold, very cold.
Yeah,
I guess I'm, what they call it, acclimating when you, you know, because I'm from upstate New York and I'm used to below zero weather in the winter. And months and months of cold, freezing weather. And now it's like the minute it gets a little cold outside, it's like, I got to get the heat on.
Yeah.
Real, real cold.
Well, it's crazy here, of course, here in the South, and especially here in Atlanta, because, you know, you have where it's real cold one day and then it's warm the next. Or either it's warm, it warms up during the day, and then at night it drops, you know.
Yeah.
Which in turn, you don't have to be outside. A lot of folks be like, well, what you doing outside? And of course, no, you wind up having to turn up the thermostat inside, you know.
Amen.
And that just keeps going back and forth. Then the next morning, it's warm again, you know. So it's an off and on thing for me, too, with the thermostat. It's like, okay, I'm going to set it to this. Hopefully, it's not going to be 30 degrees in the morning, but then it is, and the next thing you know, by noon, it's in the 60s. So
yeah,
it's that
or
time
even
of year.
Sometimes up to 70, you know?
Very hard to judge it, and it's very hard to know what to put on and what not to with this type of weather. That is very true. What I want to do is I was going to save some of the because we have so much to talk about. But, Officer Crenshaw just sent me a text. So he's going to chime in. He's not going to be able to stay on long. So that's great. It would just be great to hear from him and his point of view. And let me go back to this screen. But let me go ahead and open up his mic and welcome the law enforcement of the TMGS, Mr. Officer Crenshaw. Happy Saturday, my brother.
Happy Saturday.
Hey, Lady J. Hey, Mike. How y'all doing today?
Great. How are you? You doing all right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, Thanksgiving was just wonderful, you know, and then being a seasonal brother anyway. So, you know, good for me.
All right.
Being a seasonal brother, okay.
So, well, you know, being light-skinned, we're only picked to be appropriate, you know, at certain times of the year. So, you know, if it's summertime, the ladies don't want us. You know, they want the dark-skinned dude who's sweating and looking all good. You know, wintertime, they're the light-skinned guy.
I've never heard that said that way.
Oh,
okay.
Neither did I.
I've never heard that way of putting it, but okay, interesting. So I'm trying to see if I can get Timon, and I think he was aware, but I'm not sure that we're going to be on the day. You guys still there?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I lost you. I'm sorry. I'm going to go ahead and see, okay, what happened. I lost the board. Let me bring it back up, see if I can get him back on or get him on. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with Ahmaud Arbery trial, the verdict. Now, in the Cal Rittenhouse, and I mentioned this to Janet, I wasn't really surprised. I really wasn't. In a way, I was because it is murder. two people did die, which we talked about this last week, but two people died. One, his bicep was obliterated. But there was problems in the beginning of that trial with the judge and the prosecutor. They bumped heads at the beginning, right? If you saw any of the clips or followed it. There was a lot of, you know, objection, overrule, you know. A lot of that and a lot of pulling the jury out of the chambers or sending them back and arguing over this and that. So I wasn't really surprised that it went into favor of the defendant. It does concern me of future cases that may come about in situations like this. And I do believe it will happen again in some form or fashion. But now to the Ahmaud Arbery case. There was concern about the case being held in Brunswick to begin with. And some people were saying, why didn't they move the trial? There was a concern about the fact that there was only one black juror, and it didn't actually add up to the makeup of the community of Brunswick as far as, you know, blacks versus whites. Now, Glencoe, Glenn County, is majority white, but the verdict, I think, was just. When I looked at, you know, what the charges of each individual, I think it was just, and I'm not saying that because, oh, these three white guys did this. No, I'm looking at what the law says. And ironically, the gentleman, the third individual who was sentenced, Roddy, what's his last name, Ryan, William Roddy Ryan, he had the lesser of the three. But had he not videotaped that, there probably would never have been a trial because the videotape did. The videotape did show exactly what happened. What's your guys' thoughts on the verdict? What do you think were the key points that the prosecution did? And what do you think about the racial tones that were trying to be thrown in there by one particular defense attorney? Well, I'll take that back, too, because the first one was upset about high-profile, quote-unquote, black ministers. He didn't just say ministers, but he said black, right? For him to come out with that comment to start with. And then the comment that the attorney for one of the McMichaels family members said about the deceased of dirty toenails in her closing arguments. Janet, ladies first.
There was a lot of questions, but at first I was worried that they were going to get off with the not guilty, just like the Kyle Rittenhouse case. But after seeing the video and the prosecuting attorney, how she really dissected and tore up all the defense attorney's points, and when the first guy who did the actual killing was on the stand, she just went, I mean, she, they couldn't, if they had said not guilty, I would have been really devastated because she did a stellar job in bringing that case, and she pointed out all the things that was wrong, you know, because how can you say that you were in fear of your life when the person had no gun or anything, and you chased this person down? He even stated that they was trying to trap him like a rat. So I was glad in the end that they had them all not guilty. The third guy, I think he should have gotten off a little bit, you know, more than just three not guilties, and the rest was he was found guilty because he really didn't know exactly what was going on, but he did help them, trap them, you know. So I'm just glad that it turned out the way it did and that they did have the support of the community and a good prosecuting attorney.
Officer Control, what do you think?
Well, I think the third guy should have been charged the same as the others, because for months that video was on the black market, basically underground, to where I'm pretty much sure he did know their intentions and what was going on. The problem was they just couldn't prove in court that he knew what their intentions were. So that's why he got the lesser charges. Well, I'm glad that they held it in Brunswick in that venue, and that they did, they picked the jury from Gwinnett County. The jury came out of Gwinnett County. The prosecuting attorneys came out of Cobb County. It had nothing to do with Brunswick. So that was a good thing. It was fair on everybody's aspect. And for them to come up with the decisions that they did come up with, I'm not sure what the son got, whether he got charged with malice murder or not. I know the father didn't, and the Bryant dude didn't. But that's because they couldn't prove intent.
Well, the son, just to give you a correction, the son did get charged with all counts. He got charged with all 17 counts. All counts. He was found guilty on all counts. The father was found guilty on all counts except for one.
One.
And,
that's right. And
the guy who videotaped was found guilty on all counts except for two.
Three.
So it pretty much was it three? I thought it was two.
It was three.
The malice murder, who didn't get charged with malice murder? The last two?
The last one.
The last one. Because the first two, the father and the son had the gun.
Right.
And they were the one that started the pursuit of chasing him.
Right.
Yeah.
So somewhere, somebody had to make a statement, or something had to be seen, said or done for that malice to really uphold with a jury as far as their intent to actually kill. Even though they said they was trying to trap him like a rat, I understand the aggravated assault charges and all of that. But I'm just glad they got what they got. Rittenhouse, on the other hand, I think they dropped the ball because they didn't charge him with all the charges they should have.
Right.
The judge
probably made him be guilty on some. But the judge threw a lot of that out.
Right.
Which he really should have, because he was a minor in possession of a firearm. You know, he's not old enough to have.
Well, you know,
how point bullet.
Real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt everybody. I just opened up the mic of our other co-host, Mr. Timon Shipp. What's up, my brother Timon? Happy holiday to
you. How
you
doing, man?
Thank
I was just in a deep conversation. Yeah, you got it. I was just in a deep conversation about the about that, so I'm glad I caught you guys. Look, you know, you guys know, hey, I work at Juvenile Hall, and I got into this debate about Rittenhouse, and I stated that there are black kids who have committed murder, but they didn't get what this kid got. You got a self-defense charge. You know how many black kids are sitting on murder charges right now? They ain't got no self-defense. They ain't got any. They even, if you need to, so one, I had a white dude tell me, hey, man, well, that's how they do things in Wisconsin. That ain't California. I said, no, uh-uh. That's what you got it wrong. That's why all these laws need to change. That's why all this self-defense crap, y'all getting away with, what are you doing? So y'all, what, so you can walk around in the suburbs with an AK-47? What the hell? Why are y'all so scared? What you scared of? Hell, you've been running shit. We didn't create racism. You did. Why y'all worried about somebody coming to get y'all? Why y'all talking about somebody taking my freedom? What freedom did you lose? You ain't lost nothing. You've been used to, you ain't never had to worry about a colored water fountain or going into a certain room and everything. Your kids got it so good, but you drive a dude. You took an AR-15 rifle to a protest talking about you protecting somebody. And you got to walk. How many black kids you know can walk with an AR-15 strapped over their shoulder and walk past the police who are sitting in tanks? These dudes are in tanks and armored stuff. You walking toward them, and they don't shoot you, but you got a gun strapped to you. And he said, oh, well, that's just the way it is. They know. Hell no. Not one black person had a gun, because they know. You catch black kids walking around with guns, they will shoot them dead. And as far as the idiots out there.
A toy gun.
Hey, we should have stopped all this stuff after Trayvon Martin. Once you started to stand your ground and standing up for so-called, what doing a citizen's arrest? Arrest for what? Shoot, the prosecutor said the boy had black toenails. I said, when did you start worrying about what color his toes are? He had dirt under his toenails. How did he get, come on, Janet, how did she get to his toenails, Janet?
And how did he
It was the defense attorney who brought that into her clothing. It was the defense,
right,
you said prosecutor, but the defense attorney. And that was very, very disrespectful to the family and to the deceased. Because, here's the thing, and I'm sorry to interrupt, I want you to go ahead, but it's always paint the victim as the criminal. He's the victim.
Right.
He's the one who's dead. And, you know, I mean, it even goes back to, now I'm not saying that O.J. is innocent, but even photographs that were taken of O.J., I remember there was an article about where certain magazines, they darkened the face, you know. You know, they changed the look of him, the look menacing and everything. It's all a plan of the defense. And I really want you to elaborate or actually speak on this for me, Tarman. When the defense attorney, when he brought up the thing about the ministers being in the courtroom, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, as that being swaying of the jury, what are your thoughts when he tried to say that might intimidate, I'm sorry, is the word he used, intimidate the jury? What are your thoughts about his comment on that? Because they're the ones who decided to pick who the jury was, and a courthouse is open to the public, correct?
Wait a minute. Also, he's a minister, so you're saying a man of God is now a threat? But y'all busy. You're busy worrying about that. Well, we gonna say this is you're trying to control abortions. You're trying to control. Now you're saying you're standing your ground. And now you're saying a man of God, if he comes in there, he's going to change everything. Well, why are you the devil? Do you need the man? He's the man of God. They're ministers. What can they hurt to you? No different if you had Joel Osteen walk through the door and him being white. Matter of fact, he got a bigger following. He got a whole stadium full of people. You don't want Al Sharpton to come in. You know what I mean? Hey, you know, we're talking about a dude. You're talking about three guys. It took three guys. And I love that old, that white woman. She just looked like she was straight out of the trailer, didn't she? The prosecutor. And she had bad makeup on. Her makeup was caked on. She just looked like an old, tired white girl. It went on up in there and just said, now you followed. Did you feel threatened? No, I didn't feel threatened. Did he have a gun? No, he had no gun. Was he running away from me? Yeah, he was running away from me. She walked his ass right on to hell.
She sure did.
She walked him right on to the electric chair. And she said, how'd you get it? Well, I told her what I did. Well, you did? Well, we're about to kill your ass because this is exactly. You did it? Yeah, we did it. Yeah. Why did he do it? Oh, well, he was running in the neighborhood. Did he steal? Did you see him take anything? No. Was he running away from it? Yeah. Yeah. Did any of y'all bother to check what color his toenails were? No, we didn't, but we just going to shoot his ass when he was in the neighborhood. Why'd you, if you had told me that, I'd have no sense of it. Why'd you, I shot him because he was black and he needed to have a black ass over here, and we shot him. Okay, good. That's all they'd have got farther and probably got less of a charge if they came out and said that. But now that you lied, and you tried to lie about it, and she was able, because remember, she didn't have no, she had no say on you know, where you was from or whatever. Here's a, you ever have one of those white friends that you know that say, yeah, y'all did that. Yeah, y'all did it. Yeah, we did that shit. We did. Because they couldn't lie. because the history's mm-hmm. there. And so this white woman sat there and said, oh, hell no. Stevie Wonder can see this. Y'all lying. Y'all know what y'all doing.
Timing. Even uh-huh. when Ahmaud Arbery was towards the black truck and they was trying to uh-huh. say he was trying to get in there, he was afraid. He didn't know that other guy was with them at the time, you know, helping them.
Right, but Janet, what about the fool who was following them, taking the kid, filming it?
Right, and his name was William Roddy Ryan, I believe is his last name, or Brian. I think it's Ryan, who did it. And as I said earlier, but this is what I said earlier, is that had not for him doing that, though, had not for him taking that video, this could be a whole different story. The video would say... let me finish this for a minute, and I'll let you tell me why. Because here's the thing. The video, as you said, was underground for a while, right? It wasn't put out to the public, okay? It took 74 days for them to arrest these three. That's 2 months and 2 weeks. Roughly, or 2 months in a week, 74 days to finally arrest them for this murder. And had it not been for the video, and keep in mind, and Janet, you can kind of elaborate in a minute on that, the fact that when it went to the prosecution of who was it? The state? No, it was the county, I think, head prosecutor. Mm-hmm. She wasn't even going to, you know, deal with it. She had a dealings with the father, Nick Michaels, which they worked together. So there was a lot of underhanded shit going on.
Well, she was recently
and she's
arrested.
Being prosecuted right now because of it.
That's right. Right. She's being charged. And then the second individual, he said there's not enough evidence. So it was all put on the back burner until finally mm-hmm. another investigation went into it. But I want you to finish what you were saying, but we have to keep that in mind. If it wasn't for that video, because keep in mind is where I was following it on Court TV, and when they said that the jury wanted to see a video, that was the key thing. The commentators of the show said, you know, it's funny they haven't asked to see any video, and all of a sudden, boom, here it is. They want to see mm-hmm. a piece of video. And once they saw that, it didn't take long for them to come up with the verdict. Once they sat mm-hmm. down and watched that video, it didn't take more than maybe a couple of hours. They came out and said, we made our decision. And I think it was based on that piece of video that they wanted to see. Tymon, I'm going to let you go ahead and finish if you don't mind. And then I want to ask Crenshaw a question.
Officer Crenshaw was about to say something. Go ahead, Officer Crenshaw. He was about
to
add
in. I was going to say that they probably would have gotten away with it by – the father being a former police officer
correct.
And leaving the police department and working for the district attorney's office as an investigator, he knew what to say. So before the video, his side mm-hmm. of the story to the DA was self-defense. He tried mm-hmm. to take the guns from us when we tried to make a citizen's arrest. And we had to shoot him off the barrels of the gun. Well,
let me ask you, Officer Crenshaw. How many states? I mean, this citizen, who created this citizen arrest bullshit? What the hell did that come from? How many
before they had police
people?
Officers back in the day?
But that's 1800.
It's mm-hmm. well, it's actually still a legal charge in many
book.
States.
Still on the book.
But who would?
The catch
why would you
is,
still have that on the books?
Because some people will cooperate voluntarily. I'm making a citizen's arrest. You need to come with me down to the jail. Okay, shit, I hadn't did nothing. Come on, let's go. We'll go talk to the police. The catch to it is citizen's arrest has to be voluntary. If you come to me and you're going to make a citizen's arrest on me because I ran a red light, I tell you to go snuff my behind and keep it moving. You can't detain me. You can't hold me. You can't fight me. You can't shoot me. You can't do nothing to me but let me go and then report my tag and all of that stuff to the police.
Right.
I mean, and that's like you mentioned, brothers, back in the day.
And you had, back
in the days, but if you look at it, okay, think back, and I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but
that's a good question. But see, remember, there's a lot of shit that's still on the books that should be removed. But see, remember who's in office in some of these states and who wants to keep these certain things on the books just in case. You follow what I'm saying by just in case?
A lot of the laws that's on the books, a lot of the laws that's on the books will stay on the books. What they will do is an amendment or an amendment to them. Now, for example, if you're running down the street and I'm patrolling and I pull up beside you in a patrol car, marked patrol car in uniform, and I get out and I say, hey, come here. And you say, well, why? I want to talk to you. Man, I'm in the middle of my run. I'm trying to make my what do y'all call them, steps? I'm trying to get my steps in. You know, I ain't got time to stop. I ain't did nothing. I got to let you go.
You're supposed
to.
You're supposed to.
But I got to let you go unless I have probable cause that some reasonable articulate suspicion that you were involved in a crime that was given to me from a third party. I got to let you go.
But that's not always the case because you see that happen many times. Well, you know what? I like that you said that. I'm sorry, but go ahead and finish. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying what made them think that they could actually – detain and arrest someone.
Right.
See, the
but here's the thing you need to look at. When you look at, when you say articulable.
Be on the book.
But when you say articulable, let's say, for instance, as you said, when you gave the scenario of you pulling over someone jogging, it has to be where that you have proof. Let's say a person say, hey, look, I just saw this guy snatch a purse or whatever, you know, and say, look, someone just told me that and you fit the description. Now, that's articulable, the description that you had on this, you had on that, and you snatched the purse of a woman and this and that and the other, and she described you to a T. That is articulable, right? Okay.
Well,
you have that proof.
It's a catch to it, though, Mike. The new laws, it's a catch to it. If that was told to me by a person on the street and I went and stopped you, detained you, went through the investigation, and then I couldn't find that person on the street, how can I prove it?
Right.
So the catch to it is that third-party information has to go to the 911 console.
Right, because if you think about it, Mike, that's how a lot of dudes got lynched. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The white woman said that I was raped by a black man, and they just pluck him out of the first black man they see. There he is right there. Ooh, there you go. And they that's the Emmett Till. What is that?
Yep.
Dude whistled, he whistled at me. How many black men died because somebody said, you know, that, oh, these are citizens' arrests, you know.
Well, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that because we have a couple of stories.
Right. But I'm just saying, you got Rittenhouse, and then you got, because I got family that lives in Georgia, and I got friends that won't even go back to Georgia. My nephew left high school to go to school in Denver. His mother moved to Georgia, and then he compared the schools in Georgia to Colorado. He said, "Mom, I'm going back to Colorado," and he just did not feel comfortable down there because them Southern white folks, the way they do things, is a whole different breed, and some people it don't sit well with them. So now, you guys have a prominent black movement happening in Georgia, and it's scaring the hell out of white folks right now.
Right.
Y'all are scaring white folks
Can I say one more thing, too, with Ahmaud Arbery? They said when the police arrived, he was still alive. but they didn't try to help him. You know, if maybe he would have not died if they could have, you know, did CPR or something to try and, you know, help him out. You know, I think they were trying to. Yeah, but I actually think they wanted him to die because they didn't want nobody to point them out as doing something wrong.
Well, you look at three situations. You remember the black boy that was in Denver who was walking home in the snow and he had the mask on and the police stopped him and they end up – now, how did they catch them? Because if they hadn't done the autopsy on the body, the dude, the EMT had injected him with something and it made that boy's heart stop.
Twice the amount that he should have had for his body weight.
Right. So then he turned around. Remember the brother in New York? He called the police. He's running – the dude called the police, say his brother is not doing well. He's running around butt naked in the cold. They put a plastic bag over his head.
New York. Mm-hmm.
Right. End up, next thing you know, he's dead. You had the sister. What's her name? Bland. The dude pulled over in Texas. Girl had just got a new job. Hadn't been on the job very long. Graduated from Prairie View University, went back home. Next thing you know, 3 days in jail. Went for what? Not even a speeding ticket. It was a failure to put on her turn signal.
Yeah.
All these black
conveniently had a glitch in the camera. You know.
Right.
So that was really strange.
We got Mike, what was the boy out there in Missouri? The cops shot him because they say he stole the cigars and they end up burning down the town in Missouri and everything. Because you ain't heard no more from that cat. You ain't even going to find him no more because they know they got away with murder. You know,
and there was a guy in California that was in his grandparents' backyard and the police shot him down. I forgot how many times
they were chasing him in Sacramento, California.
Yeah.
Well, he had a cell phone in his hand, and they thought it was a gun. It was a cell phone, right? But I want to ask, but I think I mentioned this before, you guys. Where this was in Brunswick, Georgia, a community of I believe they said 79,000, which is in Glynn County, Georgia. I've been to Glynn County. I've been to Brunswick, but I've been to Glynn County. And in Glynn County, they do have a training facility. Officer Crenshaw, I'm pretty sure you're aware of this. I've mentioned it before. A training facility for Homeland Security. You're aware of that, right, Officer Crenshaw?
Yes.
And I mean the Homeland Security, some for the Department of Corrections. In fact, a person I used to date, their son trained down there. He quit. He went through it, but he quit because he saw something so horrible. He came all the way from California to do his training there, and he saw a horrible beating of an inmate in California, and he said he just couldn't take it. But they got a training campus. I mean, it's huge. It's like a little city. For something like that to happen, this Ahmaud Arbery case, I think that they definitely didn't want that scar on that community, right? For them, for those three to be found not guilty, they don't want that in a location such as that. That's one thing I thought about. But they say there's no such thing as an open and shut case, but in this case, I believe it was. Because again, I'll say the video told the whole story. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
It told the whole story. And the question is this. But I'm almost finished. But I think the video told the story because on both cases, the Rittenhouse case and the Arbery case, none of this would not have happened if the other parties didn't bring a gun. If there was no gun, it would have been a fist fight, which if you're going to have a fist fight, may the best man win. But
let me ask you this. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Why didn't they just leave him alone?
I'm just saying, Trayvon Martin. He wasn't bothering nobody.
The question isn't, the question wasn't why didn't they leave him alone. The question is, well, that is a good question. But why didn't if they felt like he was the one who was going in and stealing stuff, why didn't they call the police first and not try to be cops? Is the question. And I think that's what the jury looked at. Well, if you suspect this person, and he's on foot, he's not in a car, so he can't run or outrun a police car. You got a description on him. You see him running down the street.
He has nothing in his hand. Nowhere to hide.
And if you call 911 and tell them, hey, look, the person we've been calling about, he's running down the street here, you know the cops can blanket a community in no time and stop him themselves. I don't think, and in fact, I know that Ahmaud Arbery would still be alive had they called the cops first.
The owner of the construction company said he didn't take anything. And
correct.
The one time that something was taken from him, he don't even know when it was taken, because it could have been from anywhere.
But
let me ask you this. When you saw Arbery, right, if he stole something, where was he going to put it?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
What is there to steal? What are you going to steal in a construction site, Mike?
Nothing.
What you going to steal? What's there to take?
The tools away.
I want to answer that question because, all right, normally common sense says that if you're doing a construction site, you're not going to leave any expensive tools. We know that.
Right.
But there are people who do rob construction sites. They'll steal the copper once it's put in. But normally, and Officer Crenshaw can actually vouch for this, before you start putting in materials like copper and this, that, and the other, you're going to close in the building. You're not going to make it accessible for someone to come in and get those type of things of value. That's just common sense. Now, as I mentioned before, there was a new subdivision being built across from where I used to live. 99, almost 100 homes were built there. And I met many other contractors or the workers over there, and I had walked on to the sites, into the houses to look and see the format. I was pretty impressed with it. I never had a problem. But see, in this case, you remember, they brought up the fact that kids would ride their bikes through and go inside the homes. They mentioned the fact that there was a couple that was inside of a house. Nobody, the cops didn't come and arrest them. See, so that was another thing.
Mike, wasn't that a regular neighborhood, though, where construction, because from what I could see from the video, it was a regular neighborhood, and it was just a house that was under construction. So
it was a house,
regular neighborhood.
It was not a house under construction. It was a house being renovated. It wasn't being built from anew. It was being renovated. The owner lived down in Florida, and he had this was a neighborhood where he was renovating the home. So it wasn't new construction. It was renovating.
Okay,
right.
Good.
So where
are we going to put the copper? Say I was stealing some copper. You think a black man's going to be able to load up copper on his shoulder or pipe and walk through a regular neighborhood where there are no black people? I understand that. But what would they need to jump? I mean, Mike, I've seen crimes. You've seen crimes. Janet, y'all seen crimes. Where are we all at this? Look at there. He's committing some crime. I think I'll go make a citizen arrest. Come on, boys, let's go make a citizen arrest. Ain't nobody in their right mind. Come on. I'm going. Look at that black boy over there stealing. I'm going to go over there and make me a citizen arrest. You ain't making a citizen my ass. Don't nobody do that.
The video shows Arbery running by. They jumped in their truck and pursued him. He was just running. He lived, they said, 8 miles from that neighborhood. He was just running, something that he did often. And each time you've ever been in there, he never took anything.
Hey, Trayvon got shot for living in his neighborhood.
Yeah.
With, okay. I mean, this is what I'm talking about when you know, Officer Crenshaw, this is what I'm talking about. If we just stop this, all this citizen arrest and stand your ground, and that just seems to me, because they, matter of fact, they don't want brothers to start talking about, hey, man, why don't we go down the street and do some citizen arrest on some of these white folks? What you doing in this neighborhood? Let me smack you upside your head with this 45. Ain't that much citizen arrest in my life. I don't even want to be around half the people we see in the neighborhood. We got so much mental illness in L.A. Ain't nobody trying to talk to nobody.
But here's the thing, though, Simon. You know what's so crazy, though? Like, now, here's the thing. You're saying citizens arrest. Never heard of nothing. But you know what? Prior to Trayvon, and think about it, a lot of folks never knew about the Stand Your Ground law. Didn't know that it even exists. A lot of folks didn't even know that there was such a law on the books in certain states. A lot of people didn't know that. They were like, I stand your ground, what? And look what happened after the Trayvon Martin case or the fiasco, where you guys remember the thing of where it was. I want to take a look and see if I can follow up on this one. If you remember the video of the gentleman who came out of the store, and a white gentleman was having a conversation or an argument with a woman in a car, and he went over, you know, like, what are you doing, you know, and he pushed the white man away, and the white man pushed him on the ground, and the white man got up and shot him to death, and he pleaded, stand your ground. See, that's that thin line between the law, things that are on the books that people want to yell and scream, you know, in defense of their wrongdoing. But they had no law.
But when they told the guy to stand down and not pursue him, he did anyway. You know?
Initially, the Stand Your Ground law was brought about for home burglaries, home invasions. And they flipped it. It'd be more of a self-defense thing. That situation you're talking about where the man ran over and pushed the guy, what are you doing? That happened to be
right.
His wife, the white man
right.
confronting, at a
right.
parking spot at the grocery store.
Correct.
No, so mm-hmm. it's like I said, what they do is they don't remove the laws from the books. They make amendments to them, which is kind of like addendum one, addendum two, because
mm-hmm.
if they start removing some of the laws from the books, they don't actually prosecute on anyway, because Bill Clinton would have got locked up for, you know,
right.
I didn't have sex. That's on the books, you know.
That's true.
Well,
mm,
you know, and I would say
that's something,
you know,
I understand, because, you know, what you do behind your doors is up to you. But if one party gets mad and runs and say, hey, we did this, hubby's going to jail.
Right. I mean,
wow.
If you think about it, you know, if you think about it, guys, the way that they've whittled these laws and played with them to work in their defense, to keep their asses from going to jail, you know, to keep,
yep.
But yet, like I said, where are the brothers? If brothers start walking around with AR-15s in all those red states that has that citizens arrest crap, white folks would, excuse my friend, they would shit if brothers start walking around. If sisters start strolling up and they got a 45 or 357 Magnum strapped to their hip when they walk in Walmart, Arizona, or over in South Dakota, Georgia. You know, black folks mm-hmm. are roaming around, coming through when the black
like
power movement was going. You know,
yeah,
you know what the
deal with the Panthers.
But let me say this, the Black Panther Party did show up. They did show up in Brunswick a couple of days before the verdict, or a day before the verdict was read. They showed up, and they were armed to the teeth. Yeah, they were armed to the teeth, which they've done before. They did it, and they did it in Texas. So, you know, this was very interesting that for them to show up. So I have to switch gears, you guys. But, again, I'm glad that the verdict came out. What I found interesting that this judge is a circuit court judge. He travels around to different counties. If you listen to his last words after the verdict was read, is that the sentencing phase, it will take another 2 weeks before they do that, because he has to check his schedule for what he has to serve or the cases he has to hear in Chatham County here. So he's a circuit judge. He doesn't sit on the bench in Brunswick or in Glenn County all day, every day. He travels to different counties. So I found that kind of interesting. But we're going to have to wrap up that story and move on to the next one, because this is what you were mentioning, Timon, about certain laws and certain things and about Emmett Till. And again, thanks to Janet for bringing this up, because I have another story to follow up. And this happened this week, and I'm just going to read the article. More than $1 million raised to help Missouri man exonerated after 43 years. More than 20,000 strangers have donated to an online fundraiser to help Kevin Strickland's reentry to society. Kevin Strickland left the Missouri prison of penniless on Tuesday after serving more than 40 years for a triple murder that he did not commit, but more than 20,000 strangers have donated about $1.3 million to an online fundraiser to help his reentry to society. He was exonerated without DNA, keep that in mind, without DNA evidence, which disqualified him from being compensated by the state, despite spending decades behind bars. His lawyer said, Mr. Strickland, 62, said on Friday that the community did not owe him anything for his wrongful imprisonment. Quote, the courts failed me, and that's who should be trying to make my life a little more comfortable, he said. I really do appreciate the donations and contributions they made to try to help me acclimate to society. Mr. Strickland said the 4 days back in Kansas City had been overwhelming. The sprawl of highways was especially dizzying, he said during a phone call while headed to the Independence Center shopping mall to spend $25 that someone gave him. He said he planned to buy a bag of cough drops and a shower cap, his first purchases outside of prison in more than 40 years. The online fundraiser organized by the Midwest Innocence Project was set up by Tricia Roger Bushnell, one of his lawyers and the project's executive director. Ms. Bushnell said she routinely raises funds for newly released clients, but the amount raised for Mr. Strickland was a surprise. Quote, I think for all of us, it's hopeful, right? Ms. Bushnell said, until the system has changed or the system is failing, the community is stepping in to fix it, to fill the void. It's pretty amazing. Now, before I go on, this gentleman was wrongfully in prison, okay, 43 years, and mm-hmm. the state doesn't give him a dime because his exoneration was not based on DNA. How crazy is that?
But that's the court. But that's Missouri.
Okay. I'm that's curious
Missouri.
If that.
Missouri is a slave state. No. That's just for Missouri. Now, you got to remember, just like Georgia has their, what is that called, with citizen's arrest, Missouri mm-hmm. does not believe and never has believe in giving you back money. I guarantee you there are some southern states that feel that way too, especially if they were former slave states, because you have okay. towns right now in Missouri, you and I and Mike and Jan and everybody, we can't go. We
but
can't
let me just but now but I want you to finish it out, but let me just say this key part, because I overlooked it. I didn't overlook it, but I have to scroll down. It says that Mr. Strickland was convicted in 1979 of killing three people in Kansas City the year before, Sherry Black, 22, Larry Ingram, 21, and John Walker, 20. The only eyewitness the only eyewitness, had picked Mr. Strickland from a lineup. Mr. Strickland was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for 50 years. One of the two other men who pleaded guilty to the murders maintained that Mr. Strickland played no part in the killings, and the sole eyewitness later recanted her testimony. Judge James E. Welsh of Missouri's Western District Court of Appeals noted in his decision to exonerate Mr. Strickland. Now, that's another thing. When a person recants their story, so that's how he got free, is through the recanting, and then also, I guess, later on, of other evidence that probably came about. It says the exoneration advanced after the passage this year of a state law allowing prosecutors to hold hearings for potential wrongful convictions for which there was new evidence. Jean Peters Baker, the prosecutor of Jackson, said in a statement that she filed a motion in Mrs. Tracy's case as soon as she could in August. So isn't that interesting? Is that where when someone turns around and said, well, you know, what I told you before 40 years ago really wasn't the truth.
Yeah, 40 years. Mm-hmm.
The woman who did Emmett Till lie.
Right.
They need to go through. I'm telling you, and I don't know if they could ever spend the money. There's more cases like this, Mike, that have been going on for years. There are so many people. Remember what were they called? The Central Park Five, where Trump said that those boys had did that. What happened? They need to be lynched. Now they find out they're innocent. But yes.
The only thing that can do in cases like that, to where it wasn't proven by the state as a reasonable doubt that he didn't do it, if somebody recanted a statement or made a statement saying they're the one who did it, the only thing that can be done at that is a civil lawsuit for defamation.
Well,
that's why the state is saying that we don't owe him a dime. Go sue that person that lied on you.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't get a dime because they probably don't have a dime.
Oh, they got the money, right? Well, no, not from the person who said it, who recanted, but the state got the money. The state knew that man was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
They knew it. I guarantee you, and there's more of them like this. This is not the first case, and there won't be the last. They know that there are a lot of these dudes who got wrong deals and got dog. Look at Hurricane. How long did it take? What's my man?
Jeez.
That was the Hurricane. You know, for him to get found clear, I wouldn't be surprised if what's my man Mooma that's out there in Philly. I wouldn't be surprised if he ain't did what he did.
Mike,
but
I got one question.
Go ahead, Kershaw.
Those murders that he was accused of doing, were they looking at that as a serial killer? Because if they were, you're probably right. They knew he was innocent, but they were under pressure to close the case.
That's a good point.
So
you know, and
if he gets the verdict, he might be able to prove it.
Yeah, you know, you got a good point, because that's the same thing here in Atlanta. If you look at the Atlanta child murders, you know, they pin that all on one man, you know, which is questionable. Still is. It still will be. They pinned all of it on, what was his name?
Wayne.
I can't think. Wayne Williams. They pinned them all on him, you know. And as you said, it puts pressure on them to take the fear off the public and say, we found our killer of all these murders. But you probably didn't. Now, in the article, it does not say that this was, you know, different individuals in different locations or whatever that would be, a serial killer type thing. It just named the names of the victims. But 43 years, and he's exonerated. What I found interesting of another statement that he made in the article that I read, that he would just like to get like maybe a little, you know, he's going to move out of the state of Missouri, okay?
Oh, hell yeah.
And he's going to move out of the state, He's going to, in fact, we had a guest on, Janet, you remember Prophet. He left Kentucky after he was almost beaten to death by the cops, recording artist. He lives here in Atlanta now. And, you know, this gentleman that I'm speaking of, Mr. Strickland, he's going to move, but he wants to get a house, maybe a 2-3 bedroom, he said, about 5 dogs, farm animals, and put a fence all the way around it so he won't be bothered. It's almost like imprisoning him, like it's in a prison.
If he wants that type of life, what he needs to do is move where my friend's father, his grandfather moved. My friend's grandfather moved to Death Valley, where it gets 130 degrees. Man lived in a trailer with a giant fence around it. I say, man, why you put a fence around his trailer? He said, well, man, keep people out. I said, brother, he live in Death Valley. Ain't nobody coming here. The name of your city is Death. It get 130 degrees.
The lizards
don't even come out. It's a valley, and it's called Death Valley. If the lizard then I already told you, bro, hey, man, just spit. Can I have just a little of your spit so I can make it? Because I'm just trying to get up to where my cousins is. If a lizard can't make it in Death Valley, it got 136 degrees this year in Death Valley. Where you going? If he wants that type of life and he don't want nobody to bother him, move your ass to Death Valley. Ain't nobody coming. And he got the word. The dog, even the dog is going to tell you, hey, bro, can you just make sure there's some shade where we can go?
When they say that you can fry an egg on the ground, you can fry an egg, bacon, toast some bread.
Yes,
you can do it all right there. Even a barbecue grill in Death Valley without any fire.
Yes, you can. When he showed me a picture, man, of that trailer with that giant fence around it, he's like, yeah, that's my grandfather's place. I said, bro, ain't nobody coming out here. Ain't a thief in the world gonna come all the way out here. No, bro, that's too far in hell. What's there? Death? Oh, no, that's not. No, ain't nobody going nowhere. Hell, shoot. They even wait for it to cool down in Palm Springs before they rob you. Hell, they don't even, you know how they get in Palm Springs?
That's like
in Chicago. Hey, a friend of mine said, hey, man, y'all got any thieves out here in Alaska? No, bro, especially when it gets to minus 60. Where are you going to rob somebody in minus 60 degrees? You don't stay home.
Let me jump tracks for a minute real quick because that's true. You'd be stupid to do something like that. But now, we just talked about Mr. Strickland, and again, I want to thank Janet for finding that story. But after I read that story, I found another story that was really interesting, and we're going to get into that. And then we're going to get into the holidays. So you guys just stay tuned, and thank you for joining. And by the way, I have to say, for all of you that are listening on the internet, appreciate you tuning in to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. As you can tell, that some of our co-hosts and guests are in other states. Mr. Time and Ship, one of my co-hosts, is here. He's in California, beautiful sunny California. So thank you, Time. Let me try to pull up this story here. I had it saved on my phone on my tablet here. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Give me a minute to pull it up. But thanks to Janet, I found this other story about another killing in Florida, Groveland, Florida. Still trying to pull it up. It should be here. Okay, I think this is it. Bear with me, you guys. Okay. No, that's not.
It was right at the end of the Strickland.
Yeah, but I'm gonna go ahead. I'm gonna go ahead and put in 4 black men exonerated. Okay, here it is. And this is interesting, you guys. Now, this just came up, the latest data I saw, and Yahoo News has it, CBC Radio has it, CNN has it. I mean, you can find it. The Washington Post has it. Everyone is posting this. And it's been no longer than 4 days ago that it has surfaced, which was, what, like the 22nd, just before Thanksgiving. But the article goes like this. Four black men exonerated more than 70 years after being wrongly accused of raping a white teen girl. The families of the, quote, Groveland Four got some closure Monday after Florida officially cleared four young black men wrongly accused of raping a 17-year-old white girl in 1949. Circuit Court Judge Heidi Davis in Lake County, Florida, granted the state's motion to posthumously dismiss the indictments of Ernest Thomas and Samuel Shepard and vacated the convictions of Charles Greenlee and Walter Irvin in the case known as the Groveland Four. Quote, I would not hate, but I will love and embrace all of those who did not know at the time that my father was a caring and loving, compassionate person that did not rape anybody. I stand here today to say thank you, said an emotional Carol Greenlee, daughter of Charles Greenlee, in front of cameras at a press conference Monday morning following the court hearing. It goes on to say, in 1949, Greenlee, Irvin, Shepard, and Thomas were accused of sexually assaulting Norma Paget in Groveland, Florida, about 30 miles west of Orlando. The group came to be called the Groveland Four. The case was considered one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in Jim Crow era Florida. There were doubts about Paget's testimony from the onset, but in the era of Jim Crow, a jury convicted the men without evidence of crime. It says that, and I really want to go back to another important part of this story that I found, and I'm sorry, I'm bouncing around a little bit, because I'm looking at a photograph where it shows three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to scroll down. It says the clearing of each of the four men's names may be decades too late for them, but offers a glimmer of hope for other families facing similar realities. I hope that this is a start because a lot of people didn't get this opportunity, said Aaron Newsom, Thomas's nephew. A lot of families didn't get this opportunity. Maybe they will. The nightmarish miscarriage of justice began on the night of July 16, 1949, when 17-year-old Norma Paget claimed the four men, aged 16 to 26, raped her and assaulted her husband when her car broke down on Groveland Road. The men ended up indicted for the crime, despite little to no evidence corroborating that they were guilty. Thomas attempted to flee the town located just 30 miles west of Orlando. He was found during a manhunt and reportedly shot dozens of times. In another article I read, it said 400 times. Shepard and Irvin were sentenced to the death penalty in 1951. While being transported to a retrial, both men would be shot by a local sheriff, claiming the men attempted to escape. Shepard died from his injuries. Irvin survived and later saw his sentence commuted to a life term under the representation of future U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. Greenlee, who was 16 at the time, was sentenced to life, though he would later be paroled in 1962. He died in 2012. State Attorney Bill Gladson, who filed the motion to exonerate the four men in October, stated, quote, the evidence strongly suggests that a sheriff, a judge, and prosecutor all but guaranteed guilty verdicts in this case. These officials, disguised as keepers of the peace and masquerading as ministers of justice, disregarded their oaths and set in motion a series of events that forever destroyed these men, their families, and a community. The exoneration concludes the state's reckoning with the, quote, Groveland Four case, which has been years in the making. In 2019, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis pardoned the four men. Quote, for 70 years, these four men
have had their history wrongly written for crimes they did not commit. As I have said before, while that is a long time to wait, it is never too late to do the right thing, said DeSantis. I believe the rule of law is society's sacred bond. When it is trampled, we all suffer. For the Grovan Four, the truth was buried. The perpetrators celebrated. But justice has cried out from that day until this. Now, I want to say this. Now, this is crazy that we just talked about Mr. Strickland being exonerated after 40-something years. These men have been exonerated, though three of them are dead now. Two were murdered. One died back in 2012. But it took 70 years. And here is where a story was recanted again, just like Emmett Till's, recanted again. And it goes on to say, I'm just going to say that 6 years after the Grovan Four case, the South dealt with a second incident that rocked the country, or I'm sorry, the county, to its core, the death of Emmett Till.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? 6 years later. And it says,
so Mike, now you understand why, now, even though it's not even taught in school. Okay, critical race theory is taught in college, and you have to be going for law school. That's where it's taught. But they're so afraid. These are the stories that they're mm-hmm. afraid of. They do not want this stuff out. Hell, you couldn't even know about Hidden Figures, that it was three black women that helped that fool get to the moon. Okay, you couldn't even know that. They also, so I'm not surprised. This is not, remember, 1930, the lynching, remember those pictures they would show you in Ebony magazine
mm-hmm.
of the three brothers? Well, guess what? The two that they showed lynched, one was named Thomas Shipp. And that's supposed to be a relative of mine. And that was in Marion, Indiana in the 1930s. And this is what they do not want you to know. So you're going to have exonerations to the cows come home. Because they lynched women and men up and their children up and down the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not going to stop. I mean, hell, the reason why the movie The Green Mile comes from them killing a child. Remember, they executed a child in Louisville, Kentucky. He was only 14 years old. Remember, the shackles didn't fit around his feet, around his ankles.
Wow.
I'm not surprised. I mean, this goes all the way back to the what did they call it? The Red Summer, where all the massacres were happening in the different states and cities because of, you know, they didn't want black people to all over economic jealousy. This stuff
mm-hmm.
runs deep, man, and this is why they don't want this stuff out. You're gonna have more and more stories that's gonna come out about all the dirt that white folks did to black people. And this is why they don't want your kids. They don't want black kids to know it. They don't want white kids to know it. Because
yeah.
it's going to tell the truth
That's
on
true.
Why things are the way that they are and how they got the way that they are. And they're scared. Because they better they should be. Because they're always worried, all black folks. What was the biggest thing in South Africa they worried about? Was the people going to do to them what they did to them?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the same thing. Are we going to go? But guess what? Black people have never retaliated other than Nat Turner. You can't find that in history nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find it. Where are we?
Well, the thing is, if they think that we are not going to learn about this and we're not going to share it, you know, if they really think that, they're really crazy. I mean, you know, I mean, the only way I could say it is.
You must be out of your goddamn mind.
If you think that we ain't going to share, you know, and talk about it. You must be out of your damn mind.
But
there are
like
Cotton
said, a lot of stuff is taught in college and not in regular school. You know, I was privileged to be able to take a black history class when I was in 10th grade in New York. And that was mm-hmm. odd because we, you know, and I think we talked about that before, Mike. I, mm-hmm. the white, when we had debates, the white students from the private schools knew more about the blacks than we did.
Right.
And
right.
I thought that
they
was horrible. Yeah.
That was by design.
But they kept it a secret from us, but they knew more about us, you know? Because they tell us what they want us to hear, not what we need to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and sometimes that works a different way of being, of making somebody aware of something before they learn it from that person. You know what I'm saying? Instead of that person sitting down with you, let's say a black person sitting with that white person, you know, and that black person tells it in their way and their narrative, they can change the narrative. You understand what I mean? They can change mm-hmm. it to where, okay, that's it was okay. Because you've seen some politicians, you've seen some black and white, or you've heard them say, well, actually, in fact, what is his name? The one over HUD, you know, the Oreo of all under Donald Trump. You know what I'm talking about.
What was that?
Yeah, you know, the brain surgeon. He said that, you know, slavery was
Ben. What was Ben's name? Ben Carson. Yes, sir.
He made that comment that slavery was great for black folks. Really? I've never heard anyone say, ooh, I'm glad I was a slave, you know, other than in the movie Django, you know, he enjoyed being a slave because he was in the big house. But, you know, he made that comment. But like I said, it all goes back to the narrative, how it is told, how the story is told, right?
Right. Well, if you look at Mike, the Daughters of the Confederate. I mean, all your statues, all those Confederate statues were put up in the 1920s. Okay, that Robert E. Lee stuff and everything that was put up in the 1920s because they wanted to put out white supremacy. That was one of those who put out. There's a book called The Daughters of the Confederate. If you ever think of reading it, a white woman wrote the book. And she tells the story. She's a historian. Tells why all that stuff. And they told the story of when they changed all our history books. The Daughters of the Confederate were behind the changing of the history book. Oh, they were happy slaves. They were singing and dancing, as she said in the book. Oh yeah, none of that. No. That's what I'm saying. If you want to know, and I got black
slaves.
Oh man, I don't need to know that. I don't want to know that shit. I'm like, man, really? You don't want to know how to? That's all. And that's how they get you, because they want you to focus on being a consumer instead of you knowing your history, to take the information off you knowing about yourself, okay, and making you put your focus on crap you don't need.
Well,
we have about
it's 7:18, and we have just a little over about 45 minutes, a little under 45 minutes, I should say, before the show ends, because I definitely want to go into the Thanksgiving thing. You know, you guys know I like to live to on a happy note. But before we move on, let me ask you something as far as us as a people. When we criticize each other, when we do certain things, we look at our youth, and not just black people alone, but it's a whole new generation out there. We come from one, there's a new one, right? It just keeps evolving, keeps changing, right? So when it comes to this new generation, what do you think about their knowledge of history and just In all honesty, just in current affairs, because what was so crazy is that during the trial, I was sitting with a guy a little bit younger than me, and we were talking about the trial and the verdict and this and the other, and a young guy came, what you all talking about? He said, oh, the verdict. What verdict? What trial? They had no clue. They had no clue. And for me, it boggles the mind. And I understand not everybody watches the news, but hell, you watched the news or you found out something about 9/11 when it happened. You heard it from somebody, okay? But my whole point of the question is this. Why is it that people, especially us,
don't follow things that pertain to us, that we should pay attention to, because this is history. These trials are
because
history. These are historic trials. Well, I'm just going to say this. These are historic trials, historic stories from Trayvon Martin and beyond and before that I think every individual, especially black, should be aware of. That's my opinion. What's your thoughts?
Mike, I'll say this and I'll go. The reason why you're not going to get that, as I was saying before, I have them focused on being a consumer. I'm making materialism more important than what your social structure is. You're dealing with young people who are focused on instant gratification instead of delayed gratification. You have people that don't affect me, but yeah, them Yeezys over there, Kanye is doing is important. What Dr. Dre is doing is important. What's on TikTok is important. If we talking about what's, you know, they really don't deal with Facebook, what's on Instagram, that's important. You know, with all these dumb little, you know, trying to sell you something, the focus is on anything that's running away from. It's like I was at work, and I'll tell you this, Mike. A 16-year-old kid told me, no lie, he's in for murder. He said, man, you need to listen to me, bruh. I said, I do. He said, yeah, man. He said, I can tell you right now, you probably ain't getting no sex. I said, I'm not getting no sex? I said, well, isn't that funny? I have a 16-year-old kid who's locked up in juvenile hall trying to tell me about sex. I said, ain't that something? Last I checked, boy, the only thing you getting hold of when it comes to sex, I'm getting sex. I said, your sex is coming with lotion and a sock. Other than that, that's about as close as you get to any sex. And the fact that you're 16 years old, 6 years ago you were 10, but yet you're telling me about something about life? Yeah, you know, I said, man, you need to get away from me. And there's your problem right there, Mike. They're not thinking about that because you're talking to them. You're talking a foreign language. What you're talking about has no meaning. Look at their rap. Look at the rap that they listening to, and look at the rap you and I. You talk about music all the time, right, Mike? You into all of it. They can't. They're not into what you. They're not into the musicians and the music because you was dealing with real music. What they consider real music they try to do a shortcut. I'm gonna cut through the bushes, or I'm gonna cut through the alley, and I'm gonna save time. No, but what you forgot about is this plethora of knowledge that you're going to get from the music we used to get. You're not getting that no more. What you're singing about, you're singing about a rock. You're singing about a bird. You're singing about stuff that ain't got no meaning, whereas we were singing about life. We were singing about these kids have not lived. These kids, their imagination is some bull, except I will say I had a 16-year-old at my job that wrote a beautiful script about growing up in the hood that was hilarious because he wrote about what he knew. And boy, never even took a writing class. But you got to, you know what I'm saying? They writing about, that's why you can't get to them. Where else can you find a 25-year-old that's willing to drive from Georgia to Florida with expired tags on his car and say, oh, man, ain't going to be no thing? Now, you and I would say, no, brother, that's not smart for a black man to drive across state lines from another state, especially two of the most racist states in the world with expired tags. Wouldn't you think?
Hell, you don't even want to drive to the corner grocery store
with expired tags. But you know,
from
Georgia with Black Lives Matter, with George Floyd, with Namon Arbery and all these other cats that got killed, you decide I'm going to drive cross state because you too cheap to buy your tags and put them on your car. You're going to drive cross country and you say, oh, I'm going to be all right. But the minute you get caught, who you going to call? Mama, can you get me out of jail? Mama, they done pulled me over. But you told him, don't do it. But he
well, that tag would have cost you a hell of a lot
less than that bond out of jail, especially if you're across.
Thank you very much. And that's why you can't, you cannot share with them.
Right.
All right.
Well, you know, and back to what you were saying about being consumers, that is what's so sad about us right now. And there's so much more we could talk about, you guys, but we have about a little more than 30 minutes left on the show. I want to get into the Thanksgiving segment, the post-Thanksgiving part of the show. But I want to say this, when you said about being consumers, that's the sad part about this country now, that we are more of consumers than producers. We don't produce anything anymore. We don't create as much as we used to. That is a fact. I'm looking at people making purchases now. Black Friday just passed, which was yesterday. Come Monday, it's Cyber Monday, where people are going to be online buying stuff on the internet. It's supposed to be cheaper than what it was in the store. How true that is, I don't know. But that's very interesting. But, you know, what is so crazy is that us as a people, we spend, according to, now this is an article that I read, and it's been a couple of years when I read it, but they're trying to understand, how does the black community make purchases more than what they figure that we have as an income? You follow me? If you look at the black community as a whole of what, okay, the average black person makes this and the other, you understand what I'm saying and everything. But you know what? Looking at buying power, and they say that in the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, we will be the largest buying power money-wise. That boggles the mind, because we do buy a lot of bullshit. They ain't no lie. We do. There's no lie.
Well, Mike,
to it.
That's our fault.
We like to look good. I mean, when I say bullshit, I apologize. I'm just saying, but we like to look good. We dress up. We like to buy the high-end stuff, which we do. Okay? But according
Mike,
to the numbers.
That's our fault, and that's our parents' fault, because they've raised us to excel, to do better than what they were doing for us. But like Tom had said, we're so busy trying to do better that we're not teaching. We're not teaching about what happened to us. And then when we go to school to teach about it, I don't want to hear that. You know, that makes me sad on the inside. I don't want to think about somebody in shackles or somebody being lynched. You know, I'd rather think about how much more money I can make to get ahead. That's our fault.
But can we look at? But the thing is that we're not looking at reality. We're looking at fantasy. That's where we're leading our kids down the wrong path. Of you got to look at the realities of things, okay? And I want you to finish, but that's the unfortunate part of it is that our kids are not looking at the realities of the past, right? They don't even want to hear about it, which is basically what you just said, right? But they're looking at the fantasies of the future. But you can't, I mean, you can fantasize about the future. You can have dreams and goals. I'm not saying don't have them. But you have to understand the realities of the past in order to see what's in front of you, what your future holds. That's how come when I said about folks who say, I don't watch, you know, the news. I don't want to hear all the bad news and everything. Hey, that's happening right around the corner from your house. You think you're immune? So you have to be aware of shit that's right around you. And unfortunately, there's a lot of folks who are not aware of the shit that's going on right around them. And when it hits them, then they're like, I didn't know. No, it's your fault because you didn't pay attention. It was right there. That's the ignorance that I just don't understand about some of us, you know, and especially some of the young generation. There's nothing. In my opinion, there's no such thing as too much information and being aware of what's going on around you. There's no such thing. I mean, go ahead and finish what you were saying. I'm sorry, but that just hit me.
Officer Crenshaw.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry for chiming in on you, but it just hit me when you said that. But yeah, it is the parents' fault, you know, and it's our fault.
It's our parents' fault. Mm-hmm. I mean, we thought that what they were instilling in us was the way we need to go. You know, give my kids more than what I had, so they'll give their kids more than what they had, and the inspiration will be there to be bigger, to be better. Even though we tried to teach them and they tried to teach us a little bit about the past, they didn't tell us all about the past.
Mm.
So now we got a generation of kids that's not living for the future. They're living for the present. What can they get now?
Correct.
That's all they're concerned about. What can I get now? Because I might die tomorrow.
That's a good point. You're right. You know, and I hear a lot of young kids actually have that mindset. Like I hear some young ones that I work with, and they're like, you know, I wish a mother would try to mess with me. I'm like, how old are you again, dude? 22? You know, 21? 18?
Yeah.
You don't care? You have no value for yourself? You don't want to see your daughter or have a daughter or a grandchild? You just don't care? And like you just said, they're just living for the present. And that's a sad statement. It really is a sad statement. So, yeah, that's interesting. I appreciate you sharing that. Hey, you guys, we're running into almost the last few minutes of the show, and I really want to go ahead and jump into the Thanksgiving part of it. Because, you know, I always like to leave on a good note. But Thanksgiving was 2 days ago. I just want to kind of like go around the board and ask everybody, what are you thankful for? But I just want to share something that's interesting. How many of y'all went ahead and got a Patti LaBelle pie? Anybody? The Patti pie. Come out every year from Walmart.
No, no.
Anybody get a Patti pie?
No.
I want to see if anybody says yes or no. No? Okay. Do you realize the Patti pie sells for $4 per pie? Patty Pies makes or sells about, I think the article said here, I'm trying to pull it up so I get the numbers right. But just to make sure it's correct, they sell about 25 pies per minute every year. And you notice you only see these pies during the holiday season. Now, I know I was in Walmart, which I work with, week before Thanksgiving. They had 100 pies or more on tables in the entry. The day before Thanksgiving, I think I saw about 3 pies left. You do the math. Patti LaBelle is worth $60 million. You do the math. And think back when the Patti pie first came out and Walmart could not meet the demand. And people were selling this pie for $100 on eBay. Patti making a bank off of a pie. And people are upcheating based on a name and a product. Be honest, I've never tasted a Patti pie. I thought about buying one just to see. I've never tasted one.
You're not missing anything.
Huh?
I said you're not missing anything. Walmart has been selling Patti pies not just during the holidays, but they sell them year-round. They sell the little individual pies and the big regular pies. And they are horrible. It tastes like you're eating sweet potatoes with a bunch of sugar, and that's it.
Uh-oh. Anybody else want to respond to that?
What are y'all saying? Are y'all saying panty pies or
no, she makes sweet potato pies.
Well, she makes
and
more than sweet potato pies. Now.
Yeah, right.
She makes,
they call them Patty LaBelle pies.
Oh,
you never heard of
them?
Well, they're just
okay.
called Patty pies, and it has her. It has the image of her on the box. They're called Patty pies. They're sold exclusively, basically, through Walmart. Really, this time of year, you'll see them around Thanksgiving and the holiday season.
No, Michael, it's year-round, sweetie, year-round.
No, I'm saying you will see them, okay, pretty much of merchandise this time of year more so than you would regularly. Yeah, you could buy them year-round, but I'm just saying that during this time of year, that's when it really first came out, and so they really push it during Thanksgiving and Christmas time, because that's when people are eating, you know, cobbler, that's just all about marketing, and they know what they're doing. Walmart, all of them know what they're doing. Reason why I brought it up is because I found it interesting of how Patty sells more than just her pie. She has peach cobbler. She has a banana pudding. She has other types of sweets. Of course, keep in mind that she's been on almost every cooking show in America and everything. But I find it interesting that people, you know, just went crazy over this pie. As I mentioned, there was about 100 one day. Next day, they're gone. People were panic shopping at Walmart. Stovetop stuffing. People were buying boxes of it. Now, I understand there are some folks who do some cooking to cook for homeless folks and everything, which I ran into a few that had like 3 shopping carts filled with food. And I'm like, wow, you're going to have a big group of family. They said, no, we cook for individuals and we take it out to families and everything. I found that very amazing. I found that interesting. And I met one individual and talked to them. And they're going to do it for Christmas. And they agreed to come on the show. Those type of people I love to talk to also, of them doing that, taking that time and effort to support homeless people, to get the money together and everything, the process of it. We may learn something. So that's something that I had to look at. But I brought that up. But anyway. We're down to just a little bit of time. We still got much more. But how was your Thanksgiving? And I just want to go around the board to everybody. What did you have? What did you enjoy the most? And what are you thankful for when Thanksgiving comes? Because now when you look at what the history of Thanksgiving is supposed to be, Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims and the Indians and everything, we all know that that was BS. In some form or fashion, however you want to look at it. But what does Thanksgiving mean to you? And what do you enjoy the most about it? Ladies first, Janet, you don't mind?
I enjoy Thanksgiving, and it means to me, what it means to me is I'm grateful that God has blessed me with good health, good family and friends, and you know, so I'm just blessed that I have good health. And as far as Thanksgiving, the food was awesome. My granddaughter even made collard greens that were really good, and she was excited that I told her collard greens were good. And I did my famous macaroni and cheese. I had with my 14 cheeses, and they really ate that up and loved it. So we just had a good time. We kept it low-key, not like we normally have 30 or 40 people. We had it more down to like 20, but it was good. Everybody was vaccinated.
Fantastic. Officer Crenshaw, same question. How was your Thanksgiving? What are you thankful for, and what did you enjoy the most about the day?
Well, I'm thankful for life. Every day, because the life that I've lived at my age, I should have been gone a long time ago. The food was wonderful. I mean, I got to see my grandbaby. My daughter made macaroni and cheese and collard greens. And I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, it puts me, this holiday puts me in a different mood than any other day of the year, because I start to feel my humbleness. No matter how I might feel throughout the year, I start to realize that this is a day to take and enjoy family, friends, loved ones, life. You know, so many people have come and gone that, you know, even the ones that are gone, you know, the memories of them, you think about all of that on this holiday. Right. You know, you laugh, and then you cry, and then you eat, and then you complain because your belly's sticking out and hurting. You know, if you eat the wrong thing, you're going to end up constipated. But I did it anyway. I ate some of everything, and I enjoyed the holiday. The rest of the holidays are just holidays. This holiday, I could actually feel the spirit of love.
Great. That's fantastic. I appreciate you sharing that, because that is interesting, because according to an article I read, that Thanksgiving is the most traveled holiday because people are, and even after the pandemic, are traveling to visit family and friends. Mostly Christmas is when you want to stay home with your immediate family, right, locally. But Thanksgiving, people do enjoy traveling longer distances to spend time with their family and friends. I appreciate that information. I've seen some numbers on the board of individuals that I know, and I hope that you'll open up your mic and share into this conversation. This is interesting. I enjoy doing this because we got to really look at it. This is something that happens once a year. Every year, it's a tradition, you know, that we do here in America. Now, Christmas is around the world in some form or fashion, but Thanksgiving is an American holiday, right? And us being Americans, we all have our different reasons why we enjoy this particular day. And like some of the co-hosts just said, you know, I feel the same way. I think and I reflect on what I'm thankful for, because you have to look at it. Thanksgiving. And I'm thankful, but when you look at the word giving, I think for the people who are giving, who have been giving to me. The givings and the blessings that I've been, you know, not just through the Lord, but through friends and family, for them giving of themselves, giving of their hearts, giving of their knowledge. I reflect on that as we move into the next year. And I always try to keep that to heart and take that with me as we go through Christmas, where we celebrate, you know, the alleged birthday of Jesus Christ. It's definitely been proven that it is on the 25th, but we do put aside a day for the birth of Jesus, which in turn, after the first of the year, we look at Easter and the resurrection. I'm seeing where companies, some, not all, are starting to shut down for Easter. Can you believe that? Whether you know it or not, Home Depot used to be shut down for Easter. Lowe's did it last year. If you're going to celebrate the birth of Christ, why not the celebration or the resurrection and shut down? Interesting. But my Thanksgiving, I enjoyed. I spent with some friends. We watched football. We talked about things and different, you know, shared different stories. I enjoyed it. I was amongst friends. Actually, I was amongst some friends I've known for a while, and I met new friends at their home, and it was really an interesting experience, and I appreciate it.
I really do. I really do appreciate it, because sometimes you could be caught up in the same, routine every year, doing the same old thing and same old thing, but sometimes you have to change things, and this year I decided to change. I normally would deep fry turkeys and this, that, and the other, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to do that, especially when the oil costs twice the amount of two turkeys. Oil was $40. I could get two turkeys and put them in the oven. Not this year. I'm not going to be fried, although I didn't. But I enjoyed the day, and I was appreciative of my family and my friends, and I had to reflect on that. So I'm glad everyone enjoyed Thanksgiving. Now, are you ready for Christmas? I'm asking the question. Mm. Is everybody ready for Christmas?
Not really. The older you get, you know, it doesn't really mean the same to me, because I'm by myself, so I don't even feel like putting a tree up. Who I'm putting it up for? My dogs, you know? So, So I'm going to be more personal this year. I'm going to make they call them pocket shawls and hats, crochet, for some of my family members. I want to put something, give them something personal from me instead of just money or a gift that I actually bought.
That's a good thing. That's good. And you know what? I like that thought of doing something more personal, because I think they will hold on to it more. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think most folks, when you make it yourself, if you're gifted to do those type of things, of making things and creating things, I think folks would appreciate it a lot more because it came from your hands. That's a good idea.
Right.
You know, and I've watched a lot of videos, and I'm sorry, you guys. I mean, it's just me. I saw where this guy took a tree trunk and he shaved it down. He made this wood thing and made a table, and it was so creative how he did it off raw wood. I'm like, damn, that is amazing. And it's really easy, really easy when you watch the process. But that's from your own hands. Officer Crenshaw, I know you know how to feel a lot of things. But people appreciate things more so that you create from your own hands than just throwing money their way or you know, buying certain trivial gifts that don't last long, especially kids. When you get a toy for a kid, it has their interest for a short period of time. But that's interesting. That's very interesting. So hopefully I get one from you, Janet. But anyway, hey, you guys, again, you're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, here on Blog Talk Radio, and we're just going over the post-Thanksgiving holiday. And looking forward to a month from now, roughly, Christmas. And before you know it, we're into 2022, a new year, a new journey. Now, I heard from someone that there's supposed to be a new virus coming out of South Africa. I don't know how true that is. I'm going to read up on that. We're going to talk that probably next week. Yeah, okay, so next week we're going to come back on that and a few more topics. Of course, we always have a lot more information than we can share in 2 hours, because that's what we do. We always try to keep you up with the hot topics and give you a little education, thanks to, you know, all the co-hosts, Janet Davis, Officer Crenshaw, Time and Ship, and unfortunately, a few of them did not make the show today, but they'll be popping up shortly. They've been in touch with me. It is the holiday season. I do understand everybody is busy. So we have 10 more minutes, actually 5 more minutes. Anything else you want to share, Janet, Officer Crenshaw, before we get on out of here and make it a wrap for this Saturday?
Janet needs to put that tree up.
It's a big tree. and it takes a day of putting things up. I'm going to put all the decorations up. I just don't think I'm going to put my tree up.
Yeah, I do the decorations every year. And I say I do them for my kids who are grown, but I think I do it for me. It brings out the joy in me to where I'm not, I can be loose ass instead of tight ass on Christmas when I set out the decorations. I can just relax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't, I'm not walking around like that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I think also, I mean, you have a nice neighborhood. It looks like, of course, you live in a nice area, nice homes, you know, and I'm not trying to say that for folks think, ooh, Officer Crenshaw must be rich. No, nice neighborhood. Really does. And I think you need to do it because, see, back when I was a kid, everybody used to put up lights and this, that, and the other, and then there was a neighborhood across town known as Hastings Ranch. And that community, I mean, it, the way it was built, they had street lights or trees, I think it was. No, it was street poles. No, trees that lined on both sides. And they would decorate all those trees, you know what I'm saying, to make the neighborhood look nice. And the drive into a neighborhood that was well decorated, you know. And I think you do it, in my opinion now, I'm not saying for sure, but of course of what you said, but to be involved into making your neighbors feel to get to the spirit, am I right?
Right. I mean, because growing up, we couldn't afford outside decoration. All we could afford was the tree inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now that I get to do it outside, I'm not going Griswold crazy or nothing, but, you know, I do it with, you know, the kids.
And my friend, she still thinks I'm doing the Griswold thing. But my house sits far back from the road. So they would never see, and I got a lot of trees in the front, so people wouldn't see my house anyway, you know?
But you know what, with those trees in the front of your house, you might want to look at where putting the the tree or the lights more on the front part of the house to decorate those trees there, you know, and since they can't really see the front of the house. Get some lights, or if you already have them, to decorate that line of trees that you have in front of the house, because you sit right, you know, you're right there where when people turn on your street or come past your street, because I know the you know the way it's set up, they can see that you're sharing the spirit. Am I right?
Yeah, maybe I'll decorate the
mailbox. You know,
I'm older.
That's the way it's
not all that great anymore like it used to be.
Okay. But, you know,
my fireplace is like, my fireplace is like 9.5 feet. I'm going to decorate it real nice and put lights and garland and, you know, so, I mean, it's going to be Christmassy. I'm just not going to put the tree up.
Okay. But like you said, though, but getting older, it does make you, for some reason, in the sense of where, you know, after your kids are gone and your grandkids aren't coming by as much and this and the other, I know what you're saying as far as Janet's point of view of who am I decorating for. But for me...
But just put a smaller tree up. Still put a tree up, smaller tree.
Well, for me, it's like, you know, it just kind of like gets me in the spirit more, I guess. If I go ahead and do it, it puts me in the spirit more for Christmas if I do have some lights or a tree up or whatever. And for years I've done it. Last year I didn't do it, years before. And even though there was grown folks living in my house at the time, I just wanted that spirit, you know, having the lights, you know, the twinkle of the lights. Just when you come home from work, you know, you relax and it's like, oh, yeah, it is. It is Christmas time, isn't it? You know, it's like a reminder. This is the time of year. So, yeah, interesting point. Interesting point. I appreciate that, Janet.
When I do my little decorations without the tree, I'll take and put a picture on our group page. So you'll see it's Christmassy. I just want to put that huge tree up. I have small trees, but it's in my it'll be in the foyer.
Well, even if you don't put the tree, Janet, just make sure you play the Charlie Brown Christmas theme. That'll get you every time.
All right.
That gets everybody. I don't care how old they are or how young they are. They hear that Charlie Brown Christmas theme, and Christmas takes over.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. It does have a great feeling. And this time of year, now I'm not going to lie, we have 5 minutes left, and I'm going to go ahead and close us out. But the only thing that bothers me is that where I just get so tired of being in a store and hearing all these Christmas songs, though. And when I say all these, it's basically the same song by different artists. And don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on the holidays, but ooh, when you work at a place and you hear those same songs over and over again, it pounds in your head and you go home and you're sleeping or you're trying to go to sleep and you hear those songs and you can't get them out of your head, that is torture. But anyway,
well,
I love the holidays.
If it's Mariah Carey, I don't want to get it out of my head. I want to just keep hearing it and hearing it and hearing it.
Right.
Hey, you guys, thanks for tuning in to TMGS on this Saturday. And I'm so glad to be back with all the co-hosts. Well, not all, but the majority of my most reliable co-hosts here. And as I said, that 2020 is going to be a very different year. By the way, shout out to Karen White. Karen White, with her happy holidays, she responded and said same to you guys. And, of course, we're going to have many of our guests from this year return next year because, you know, they're always doing something, and they definitely enjoy, and we enjoy, them coming on the show and sharing with us. With that being said, we're going to get out of here and make sure you tune in next Saturday for more interesting topics and conversation. And, you know, just make sure you chime in, call in, listen in on the internet. Press the number one when you call the number so we can open up your mic, hear your comment or question. And it's all happening here on the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll see you next Saturday. God bless and good time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.